right, friends, welcome to Friday, August 21st, 2026. I'm Mike Adams, and this is Bright Videos News. And today we've got an interview for you with Google whistleblower Zach Voorhees. And we're doing something, well, we're attempting to do something really unique and new today with that interview. If we are able to make it work today, I have a new program that illustrates the concepts that are being talked about during the interview, and we'll be placing those instructional graphics into the interview itself so that you can see these visualizations of what we are talking about. Now, what's funny about this is, of course, it's Zach Voorhees. I'm Mike Adams, and my co-host is Todd Pittner. But the transcript doesn't really get it correct about who's saying what. And also, the show is called the Zach Adams Effect. So the AI engine thinks there's a Zach Adams somewhere in the show. So it probably thinks there's four people. So some of the names might be wrong. Just be aware of that. But the concepts, at least the slides I've seen so far, the concepts look really good. So if I'm able to make that work, then I will have that for you today. In the meantime, speaking of AI, I have a special report for you that should be quite alarming. And this is actually something that I covered months ago, where the private equity loans that are being handed out to these AI frontier companies with hundreds of billions of dollars in loans, well, some of the private equity companies are selling those loan packages off kind of like the subprime mortgage collapse of the different tranches of bad loans, ninja loans, etc. Well, in this case, the loans are being sold off to insurance companies or different funds that run pension programs, for example. But it's insurance and pensions and other investment funds. So when the AI bubble bursts, that is the investment speculation bubble, then what's going to topple will be probably the largest financial crash in our nation's history. And it's going to end up on the shoulders of pensioners, taxpayers, and insurance customers, which means the big tech people who are running this whole massive investment scam, they will get bailed out. They won't go to jail. Nothing bad will happen to them because this is America. The worst criminals of all, they get invited to run the Treasury, you know, or run the Pentagon or run the White House, whatever, or run the Senate, you know. But nobody will go to jail, but you and I will have to foot the bill for this. And we know the crash is coming. I mean, it's clear as day. So watch out for that. I have a full report that gives you the details on that whole thing. Also today, I have another special report for you, entitled Why Energy Independence is More Valuable Than Money. Money's actually losing its value. Well, I mean, obviously, but I mean, money is losing its role in society because there are things that you can't buy. And so I've got a special report that I actually recorded, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks ago. And it seems like today is the right day to share it with you. So I'm going to be playing that. And then, of course, the Zach Voorhees interview on decentralize.tv, where we are talking about what I call the compute famine. And then Zach has some very interesting news about how the frontier labs in the United States are withholding their best technology from the people. They're just holding back. They're not going to release these models now, and they say they're too scary or too dangerous to release, but they need a lot more investment money in order to achieve superintelligence. So wait a second. You're so dangerous, or your models are so dangerous, you can't release them, but you want more money to build more of that? And the answer is apparently yes. Yes, it is exactly that. And then also today, there is a segment that I did with Ben Swan a couple of days ago, and I'm going to play that segment for you. Actually, I'll play that before my interview with Zach Voorhees. And by the way, next week, I've got some really great stuff coming up for you. I was also a guest with Scott Kesterson on Bards FM, and I'll be playing that interview for you, I think, next week. plus some other amazing, amazing decentralized TV interviews that we just filmed earlier today. I've also got some new video of what's happening with the freezing xylitol crystals and the microscopy analysis that has now been semi-automated using AI vision language models. So that's pretty cool. That's all coming up. Very good stuff. Now, two other things. We have the course with Dr. Alfonso Manzo that is continuing to stream today at brightu.com. And these are some of the final chapters of the course, but it's still free to watch. Also, that course is available for purchase if you want to support Dr. Manzo and our platform. And people are raving about his course, which is about a touch healing technology or methodology, maybe is a better term for it, and what's behind it, how it works. And it's really, I've had a lot of positive feedback on that. So that's something that people are very interested in. You can check that out again at brightu.com. That's just the letter U. So the word bright followed by the letter U, brightu.com. And then I want to remind you that coming up the following Saturday, August 29th, I'll be launching my new course called Unbreakable, and it's about your genetic survival and specific strategies for surviving both radioisotope fallout, exposure to 5G or ionizing radiation, as well as surviving vaccine shedding because of the mRNA wave that's now about to be unleashed upon us. So we're all going to be swimming through all kinds of mRNA-induced, you know, protein toxin shedding. Oh my goodness. It's like swimming through toxic stew all the time. People are going to be shedding all over the place. Well, how do you survive that and keep your genetic code intact? So I have a 20 plus hour free course that is now fully illustrated. Well, it's in the process of being fully illustrated, I should clarify. But I've already seen all the graphics for chapter one and it's amazing. So this is a visual treat, and it's going to teach this information in a manner visually that's very memorable. So you'll be able to grasp these concepts very quickly. And it teaches you how to protect your genetic code using targeted foods, superfoods, sprouts, supplements, herbs, you know, very specific herbs that you can grow that are very good at helping your body protect itself. By the way, one of those herbs is just parsley, and there's a specific reason why parsley is really good, because it has a molecule that plays a key role in genetic protection and repair enzymes and so on. And I cover all that in the course. So that's coming up Saturday, August 29th, and you'll be able to, well, you can just go to, on that Saturday, you can go to geneticsurvival.com. That's going to be the permanent website for the course. And there, you'll be able to click into brightu.com, and you'll be able to watch the entire course for free as it starts streaming that Saturday. And like all our courses at brightu.com, one chapter will stream on a loop each day. So Saturday will be chapter one, then Sunday will be chapter two, Monday chapter three, etc. You can also optionally purchase the course if you want the whole thing ahead of time, you want to download it, etc. That's your choice, but you don't have to. You can watch the whole thing for free. I'm making the course very affordable for those who want to purchase it, by the way. I'm not actually trying to sell the course. I'm trying to get the course out there. I'm trying to get as many people as possible to learn and listen and share the course. But for those who want the files, you want to have a copy locally, then you can purchase it and you can download it and you can put it on a thumb drive and you can even share it with some of your friends if you'd like. You have my okay to do that. So go for it. All right. So that's what's coming up for you today. And also coming up over the next week or two, a lot of fascinating information, a lot of solutions for you to survive the insanity that has been unleashed upon us. Anyway, the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a lot of solutions for you, a lot of new videos, a lot of new technology rolling out. Some things that I think you will really, really enjoy and that will help you prepare for, you know, the insanity, the chaos that's coming, and also the clearly a market collapse, probably a debt collapse that's coming as well. So thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of today's broadcast. And I'll talk to you again probably on Monday, if not sooner. Enjoy. There will be massive economic carnage ahead as the AI bubble, the speculative investment bubble, bursts. And remember, I've said this before, I'm not at all claiming that AI technology is a bubble, because it isn't. It's really actually just in its infancy, and it continues to leap ahead in quantum leaps of advancement. It's just rather extraordinary, actually. But the investment bubble is a giant scam. And in my opinion, it's a giant scam because, see, and I covered this a couple of months ago, but discussions have come back around. Ultimately, the taxpayers are going to have to bail out the AI bubble. Here's why. Here's why. So a lot of the lending is private credit. It's not from banks. It's from, you know, private lenders who are lending these hundreds of billions of dollars to various tech companies and AI companies to build AI data centers and things like that. Sorry about the background noise, by the way. I am in a large vehicle at the moment, getting some special kind of work done. But anyway, that investment money from private equity, well, those debts are effectively washed into these funds that have as their clients pension funds or reinsurance funds. That is, you know, some of these are really insurance companies that are investing their money into the debt of the AI bubble, because insurance companies have to do something with their money. And they have to do something that's going to earn some kind of yield. Otherwise, they'll lose money and they won't be able to pay out on the insurance policies that actually earn money over time, right? So these insurance companies are effectively buying this debt. But when the debt goes bad and some of these insurance companies fail because of state regulations, the cost of bailing out those insurance companies will be shared by all the other regulated insurance companies in the same state. Effectively, it means that the other insurance policyholders, which is everybody who drives, let's say, you know, everybody's got car insurance, and a lot of people have property insurance or renter's insurance or life insurance, etc. The costs of the bankruptcies are going to be shared by all of those other people who are buying insurance policies, which is virtually everyone. And in some cases, in some states, the bailouts will be augmented by state funds, which means taxpayers will ultimately foot the bill for that. So really what you're looking at here is the fact that the AI speculative investment bubble has shifted its risk to taxpayers and consumers, while all the benefits accrue to the technocratic corporations and the techno elite that stand to control AI technology and control the data centers. In other words, they get all of the benefits and all of the gains, but they have none of the downside. So when the collapse comes, and the collapse is huge, it's going to be yet another case where the criminals who ran the scheme don't get arrested, don't get prosecuted, don't go to jail. In fact, they will walk away with deep pockets and huge bank accounts, while you, the taxpayer or the insurance consumer, you will be left footing the bill. And why? Because it's always that way. You're betting against the house. You know, the house doesn't lose. The house makes sure that it wins. And this is how it does that. It makes sure. And the house, in this case, is the technocracy. And here's the thing. You are invested in this if you have pensions, if you have retirement accounts, if you have insurance policies. One way or another, you are invested in the AI investment bubble, even though you never consented to it, even though you never were given a choice to opt out of it. You are invested because that's where your pension funds are invested without your consent. Now, when this crash comes, it's going to be absolutely catastrophic. It's going to bring down almost every asset, probably including temporarily gold and silver, by the way. Just giving you a heads up warning about that. Because there will be a massive sell-off of everything. Stocks will crater. You're going to have a sell-off of bonds, which will cause bond yields to spike. You're going to have a sell-off of crypto and a sell-off of gold and silver. Why? Because everybody's trying to make their margin calls. So yeah, you're going to see plummeting everything for some period of time. But the stock market with certain stocks, semiconductor stocks, you know, AI stocks, etc., some of those will plummet 95% or even more. Some of those will go to zero, a few of them. This is going to be far worse than the dot-com crash and far worse than the subprime mortgage collapse of 2008. According to Gerald Celente, who I recently interviewed, this is going to be worse than the 1929 crash and Great Depression era. It's going to be financially devastating, but not for those who got out of the system before the collapse happened. And who are those people? It's people like you. people who have gold and silver. You are increasingly out of the system, and you will be insulated from the worst effects of this collapse. It's those who own a bunch of stocks and who have a bunch of pensions they're relying on and so on, who will be really hurt badly. And the voices will scream for government bailouts, and the bailouts will happen. So there'll be some amount of intense financial pain. The screaming will happen, bail us out, bail us out. The bailouts will come. And in financing the bailouts, the federal government, through the Treasury and ultimately the Fed, the Federal Reserve, they will print trillions of dollars. So there will be massive currency creation that will make the COVID era look like child's play. They will have to print many trillions. It might be, I don't know, I'm taking a guess. Let's say anywhere from $2 trillion to $5 trillion. Because the losses are way worse than just the nominal value that you're thinking about. There are also derivatives involved in this. There are leverage bets. There are interdependencies, massive losses that will cascade through the system. So I'm going to say $2 to $5 trillion in losses. The bailouts will have to print all this money. That money will flood into the system to save the banks and save the AI giants that are working with the Department of Defense. So they'll try to save OpenAI. They'll try to save Anthropic if Anthropic is doing the bidding of the Pentagon, etc. All this money will flood into the system. That's going to make, of course, your dollars worth less. So from that point, you're going to have inflation like you've never seen before. People will start to talk very frequently about hyperinflation, even though we may not be technically in hyperinflation. You know, 50% or more annual inflation, I think, is considered hyperinflation, if I have that right. We may not be there, but we could pass that also. There are many scenarios where annual inflation could exceed 50% in the years ahead, following the massive AI speculative crash or speculative bubble crash. So how can you protect yourself from all of this? Well, the answer should be obvious. Own physical gold and silver, not ETFs of gold and silver, not funds of gold and silver, not mutual funds that invest in gold and silver. Own the physical metal under your control, in your possession, in your hands, or in your safe, or in a vault where your name is on it, where it is specifically titled to you. Those are your ounces of gold and your ounces of silver, not some giant pool where you have a claim on a certain number of ounces, but actually your gold and your silver with your name on it. And that level of vaulting service is available. And if you want that level of vaulting service, you can get it through our sponsor in the gold and silver space, which is Battalion Metals, that was co-founded by Tucker Carlson. And you can get to the Battalion Medals website by going to medalswithmike.com. Now, my company is an affiliate of Battalion Medals. We've worked with them for 7 years now, I believe. And if you use discount code RANGER, they will waive the shipping insurance fee, which will save you a little bit. But Battalion Medals will get you physical gold and silver in your hands. And then from there, obviously protect it, right? Keep it safe, keep it secret, keep it private, keep it hidden. I've written a whole book on this that's at brightlearn.com. It's a book about secret hiding places for gold and silver, how to vault it, or Hidden Vault, I think is the name of the book. You can find this again. It's at, well, books.brightlearn.ai. You can find it there. Download it for free. Shows you how to hide your gold and silver. And then when the stock market collapses, or the banking system collapses, or the investment funds collapse, or the brokerage houses collapse, or the banks have a bail-in, you'll lose all the money that you have in a bank account if that happens. I mean, I know you're going to say, well, the FDIC insures accounts. They can't insure a massive cascading collapse all at once. They don't have enough funds for more than about 1.5% of the banks failing, I think, something like that. So when there's a massive cascading failure, they don't have the funds. Now, there could be a giant government bailout, but that's my point also. If there's a giant government bailout, then the dollars are going to become worthless or increasingly worthless. And ultimately, that means gold and silver are going to skyrocket in dollar-denominated value, even though they will probably fall in the short term as everybody panic sells everything. But those people who hold on to physical gold and silver and ride through the reaction to the AI bubble collapse are going to be sitting on extraordinary wealth that you will be able to trade for almost anything that you want or need. You'll be able to trade it for, you know, land or for vehicles or for computing, houses, you know, diesel fuel, whatever. That level of wealth can only be achieved outside the system because the system is going to fail. Right now, the AI speculative bubble is holding up the entire system. That's the key understanding here. The system doesn't have redundancy. It doesn't have diversity. We don't have a bunch of other strong sectors that are manufacturing amazing breakthrough products and things that will carry us through an AI crash or a semiconductor crash. The collapse of the AI slash semiconductor bubble will bring down the entire market. And again, it's going to be far worse than 2008 or than 2000 or even Black Monday 1987 or even the Great Depression. So be prepared for that. Now again, if you want physical gold and silver, go to medalswithmike.com. Just remember, I'm not your investment advisor. There's always a risk that gold can go up or down in dollars. And same thing with silver. And some people think silver is overvalued. Some people think it's undervalued. I just think it's a way to save assets that are real and physical that will outlast the dollar. So I don't worry too much about fluctuations up and down. In fact, the last time I bought silver, it was at $76. So it has fallen since then, and I'm not concerned about that because I have the ounces. See, the ounces haven't vanished, even if the price has gone down. I've got the ounces, and I know the ounces have intrinsic, physical, you know, elemental value in industry, not just as a monetary vehicle, but as an industrial element. So I know that the long-term viability of gold and silver is immutable. It's part of the table of elements. It's part of the nature of the cosmos, actually. Gold and silver will be here long after human civilization has come and gone. There will still be gold and silver. So if all that makes sense to you, do your own research. Obviously, you talk to your own investment advisors, find out what's right for you. But if it makes sense that gold and silver can help you have basically a financial insurance policy against the collapse of the AI bubble, then consider gold and silver at medalswithmike.com. And thank you for your support, supporting our sponsors. There are other forms of gold, like goldbacks. You can find those at rangerdeals.com, which is our affiliate website. Or you could also check out maybe local dealers to get gold and silver locally. Occasionally, Costco will sell gold coins, by the way. Seems like every time they do that, they sell out very quickly. So I don't think they've got them in stock right now, but who knows? Every once in a while, they will. It's probably not a bad deal, you know, you go in there. You know, here's $4,600 and give me an ounce of gold. Okay. Costco sells gold sometimes. It's interesting. But whatever you do, sit on the physical metals. That's what's going to carry you through the craziness that's coming. So if you want to follow more of my videos and podcasts and so on, you can follow my work at brightvideos.com. And my articles are found at naturalnews.com. And thank you for listening. Be well. Protect yourself. Protect your assets. Because they're going to be threatened by what's coming. We're all going to suffer some losses. I'm preparing for it. Whatever I have in the bank, kiss it goodbye, you know? Probably. So just make sure you've got assets outside the system. And then you'll probably be just fine. All right. Thanks for listening. Take care. This is a podcast about the critical need for energy independence. See, we're in a world war right now over energy, among other things, but Matt Bracken calls it World War E. E is for energy. And as part of this war, our own access to energy is clearly about to become restricted, you know, more scarce and more expensive. And that includes diesel fuel, it includes natural gas, it includes the downstream products from those sources of abundant energy, such as nitrogenous fertilizers, ammonia, you know, phosphate fertilizers, etc. And then there's electricity. See, the power grid is powered by a diverse array of energy inputs, depending on what grid you're on, what region. It could be coal. It could be natural gas. A lot of it's natural gas in the U.S. It could be nuclear. It could be wind. It could be solar, etc. I mean, those are the main sources right there. Many of those sources are increasingly strained, and the supply chains are increasingly fragile. And this is why the Eastern Power Grid, the PJM Interconnect, as it's called, which serves, I think, around 65 million Americans spanning 13 states, that power grid is already issuing warnings that it won't be able to handle peak demand with a sufficient buffer beginning in 2027. We've also just had warnings from the Southwest region of the Western Power Grid in the United States, warning about peak demand on hot days. Of course, you can have high energy usage on both extremely hot days or extremely cold days. And so this risk can happen both in the summer and the winter. The simple truth of the matter is that the U.S. power grid is becoming a lot less reliable than it once was. I recently joined Redacted with Clayton to talk about these very topics. And the takeaway is that the only real solution right now, because of the fragile nature of the power grid and the unreliability of the, you know, the fossil fuels, the gas, etc., the solution is to become energy independent if you can. Now, there's really only one easy way to become energy independent right now based on current technology, and that's to use solar panels. You can use solar panels combined with power stations. And then those power stations store energy, and you can use those power stations later on to, you know, charge your phone or run a blender, run a refrigerator, run lights, etc. And there are a lot of different power stations available. These are all off-grid systems because they're not connected to your grid. And that's a great way to start because you can get sort of smaller or medium-sized power stations. Our sponsor has many of them, for example, Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com, they have power stations made by EcoFlow, and I think they're adding another company soon. There's another company called Pecron that I'm currently recommending and using also, which you can find their products at rangerdeals.com. And they make some very large units. EcoFlow also makes large units. And there's some units you can buy at retail. I think there's like Jackery units that are available at retail. And this is a great way to get started because you can just erect a couple of solar panels and, you know, you can have some backup power. And once you do that, you'll pretty quickly want to scale. And when you scale, that means a full-blown solar system with an inverter, charge controller, plus batteries and things like that. And I'm not going to go into all those details here today, but rather, I want to reinforce the freedom that energy independence gives you. So let's just go down the list on what's on the top of my head here. With energy, you can cool your home. With energy, you know, you can make ice. With energy, you can boil water. You can cook meals. With energy, you can run your appliances, washing machine, dryer, obviously. With energy, you can charge a robot, charge a drone, or charge your EV. So when you have energy, you have range because you can refuel your EV. If you have an EV, you can refuel it essentially from sunlight. So you don't need the Strait of Hormuz to function. You don't need oil refineries. You can recharge from sunlight. And when you're doing that, the government can't tax your harvesting of the sunlight. And when you're driving on the roads with your EV, you don't pay a fuel tax. You don't pay a highway tax. You don't pay the normal combustion engine fuel taxes that are very high. So you're operating at a fraction of the cost of driving a gasoline engine or a diesel engine. And you have the freedom of being able to refuel without having to go to a gas station. You don't have to depend on refineries functioning. You don't have to depend on there being peace in the world, because you can just recharge from the sun. So that's very empowering. But you can do a lot more things. Energy independence is critical because you can run your local AI inference engine by having a local workstation with a GPU, and you will have already downloaded open source AI models. So you can just run those locally. You can have access to an encyclopedia of human knowledge at home on your own system, without relying on the power grid. Energy independence is going to become more important than money. Really, in many ways. Because the power grid will become unreliable. Wherever you live in America, you're likely to experience more brownouts, blackouts, and even rolling blackouts, and in some cases maybe shutdowns, in the years ahead. Because the power grid will become less and less reliable as more and more data centers are connected to the grid, using up the available energy and also rendering household use a lower priority tier because, you know, the data centers typically will demand agreements that they be kept online. Although there are some exceptions to this. I think there's a law in Texas that requires data centers to be shut off first compared to residential users. But in other places, it's the opposite situation. So depending on where you live, you may or may not have energy when the data centers do. The bottom line is you used to be able to depend on the power grid to always give you the energy that you wanted. You could plug in anything, you know. You could build a house. You could have new electrical service. You could just ask for it, and they would give it to you. Oh, I need 200-amp service at this house. I need 600-amp service at this commercial building, whatever. They would just give it to you. No more. Those days are over. Easy power grid interconnections are over. Now, at the same time this is happening, solar panel prices have plummeted over the last several years to the point where solar panels are ridiculously cheap now, and they're good. I mean, high quality, good solar panels are ridiculously affordable. They're so cheap that it's not the solar panels that are the issue with building solar systems. It's the batteries. The batteries are where you'll spend more money. And fortunately, batteries are also getting much more mature, more capable. They can handle more charge-discharge cycles. And they're safer because a lot of battery chemistry is switching over in the direction of sodium ion, although it'll take a few more years for that to really work its way across the ecosystem. The result of all of this is that today it's more affordable than ever before to go off-grid, to achieve energy independence. And if you're just a normal household that just does, you know, normal things, a computer, some lights, you know, a blender, some laundry every once in a while, whatever, you don't even need that much energy. You can go off-grid relatively easily compared to, you know, commercial operations. And I encourage you to look into this, but also watch out for scams. There were some scam companies running around for a few years that would, they would do the install for you, and then you would just make a monthly payment to them. But their service sucked, and they never really did maintenance, or some of them. And then some of them went bankrupt, but you still had to make the payments to the new owner who provided no service. So there are those horror stories out there. What I say is buy the equipment, own the equipment, do the install, pay for the install, and just own it free and clear if you can. Even if you have to start smaller, just own it free and clear. Don't get into these weird scams and schemes of payments and leases and all kinds of paperwork, you know, and risk. It's better just buy the equipment and own the equipment. And then in the process of planning this, I want to say something that is a radical departure from what you've probably heard. I do not recommend grid tie systems at all. No longer. I recommend 100% off-grid systems, and there's a very important reason why. So grid tie systems, typically, they do not use batteries. They're tied into your power grid. They simply augment the grid. But grid tie systems, when the grid goes down, your whole solar system goes down. So you don't have any off-grid reliability. You don't have any redundancy. If the grid goes down, you go down. And that's because the solar panels are tied into the grid and it has to be shut off automatically to protect linemen who are working upstream, and you can't be sending like high voltage power up the lines when the linemen are conducting repairs following a storm, right? You don't want to hurt them with insane amperage and voltage. So that's why all the grid tie systems are designed to shut down. And they do. They disconnect when the grid is not on. So the system that you want instead is called an off-grid system. An off-grid system is not connected to the grid. You can't feed power back to your power provider. You don't want to. You want to store it locally using batteries, for the most part, batteries. So an off-grid system, you install that with your solar panels and your batteries and your all-in-one inverter slash charge controller. And then you would install a transfer switch. This is typically a large switch that, you know, an electrician would come install. You do need to have this done safely, obviously. It's a large switch, and it has one lever. And this lever disconnects you from the power grid. And then in the downward position, typically, it would connect you to your own local off-grid grid, if that makes sense. Your off-grid grid. From that point forward, oh, and by the way, there's a little short gap where you have no electricity during the switch, and that's by design. You never want the grid touching your off-grid grid, because bad things can happen. So you have to have that air gap in between. So if you have a computer, put a UPS on it, you know? If there's something that doesn't like having no power, something that reboots, put a little UPS on it. Very simple. Anyway, what you can do with this then is you can use your solar panels, you can charge up your batteries, and then you can switch over to your off-grid system. And from there, you might be able to just run 24/7 off that system, depending on, you know, how many solar panels you have and how many batteries you have, etc. On cloudy days or rainy days, or if you have a high electricity usage that you can't keep up with, then you could switch back to the regular power grid. And when you do that, then your off-grid grid will just charge up and the batteries will charge up to 100%. And when you think it's appropriate, you can switch back to the off-grid system. And this way, you can run certain days completely off-grid, but you can still use the grid in an emergency if you don't have enough power on your own. So that's one way to achieve this transition. But in the ultimate setup, you would be 100% off-grid, and if you run low on power, you would crank up something like a diesel generator. And that diesel generator would, you know, charge up your batteries to make up for a loss of sunlight or whatever's going on, or to make up for your extra usage of kilowatt hours because you're running your air conditioners all day or whatever it is. This is why people typically oversize their solar installs. And typically I hear people saying like 1.3. So if you think you need, you know, whatever, 100 kilowatt hours, size it for 130. You're going to need extra because, you know, your solar panels aren't going to always work at 100%. The sun's not always going to be out. You're going to have cloudy days, whatever. And depending on your region, you may have to oversize it by a lot more, 1.5, 1.7, whatever. You know, your local solar experts will know this. They'll know your, you know, seasonal gathering of kilowatt hours based on your latitude. They're going to know the weather patterns, etc. For every square meter of sunlight reaching your land, there's an average amount of kilowatt hours that that's going to produce, you know, per day throughout the year. A lot less in January if you're in the northern hemisphere, and a lot more in July, obviously, because there's more hours of sunlight and the sun is more directly overhead. Anyway, these are simple questions to answer with a little bit of research. But the bottom line is, once you do this, you have achieved power independence. Then you can freeze ice, run air conditioning, boil water, run, you know, water pumps, charge your car, run your computer, you know, run your AI models, all these things, charge your power tools. You can do all this without needing permission from the government, without paying taxes to the government for the energy, without having to buy any energy, without having to pay the power company a connection fee or any of these things. This is freedom. It costs money to get there. You have to have some technical expertise. It's a learning curve. I get it. I've been going through that learning curve myself, but it's well worth it because at the end of the day, you have the freedom that comes from energy independence. So I'll be bringing you more videos about this coming up soon. I keep saying soon, but I have delayed the filming of this inadvertently, but I will get you videos. I'll be posting them on brightvideos.com and I'll show you how this works. And just remember, use a professional installer, use, you know, all the safety protocols. You got to have inline fuses. Some places require inspections or engineering plans or whatever. Depends on how many liberals are in your city, basically. The more liberals, the more they want to have, you know, oversight over your system. So it's up to you what you want to do, but I say keep it safe, keep it professional. Make sure that you're not just going full-blown DIY, like, let's just throw our fingers into all these contacts and see what happens. Like, that's a recipe for death, so don't do that. Be safe, but definitely check this out. You can follow more of my work at brightvideos.com, and you can also follow my articles at naturalnews.com, or you can follow me on social media. My username is HealthRanger, that's on X, and also brighteon.social, which is our own uncensored platform. I'm also Health Ranger right there. So check it out. Oh, and healthrangerstore.com if you want to get prepared with storable foods and superfoods and high-density nutrition supplements, things like that. So check that out, and thank you for your support. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Take care.
There is a fear that Trump is on the verge of becoming Jimmy Carter. If he comes out of this war defeated, it will become his legacy. And desperation might lead him and the administration to say, we can't lose, therefore we're willing to ratchet this thing up and do something so extreme that the entire world has resisted this for decades and promised to never do this.
Pandora's box is about to become radioactive. Yeah. I don't think it will stop at one nuke. If Trump is foolish enough, this could unleash a rapidly escalating nuclear retaliation and then counter-retaliation.
The war with Iran is entering a new and potentially a much more dangerous phase. The clock has run out on the U.S.-Iran Memorandum of Understanding. There is still no deal tonight. The Strait of Hormuz is still largely shut down. And President Trump says no talks are taking place at all. And now Iran is drawing a new line in the sand. Tehran says the strait stays closed until Washington meets its demands, including lifting the blockade, releasing frozen Iranian assets, lifting oil sanctions, and ending U.S. military operations. And then comes the part that should get everyone's attention. Iran says If those demands are not met within 3 to 4 weeks, it will severely escalate. So let's just think about what's being said there for a moment. 5 months into a war that was supposed to bring a quick victory, and Iran is now issuing Washington an ultimatum. And as that's happening, it's happening the day after U.S. Special Envoy Jared Kushner met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, trying to find a path toward broader regional peace. Kushner says the U.S. will not restrict Israel's right to defend itself. He himself discusses giving Hamas an ultimatum, that if they don't disarm, Israel can go in and, quote, finish the job. Expiring MOU and talk from both sides of the conflict that signify that we are no closer to reaching a peace deal than we really were on day one. And the results of this continue to be seen. Trump's approval rating has fallen to 33% in the latest Reuters Ipsos poll. This is the lowest, by the way, of his presidency. 80% of Americans, 80% say they expect U.S. involvement in the Iran conflict to continue for an extended period. So the question is, what happens next? Well, if you listen to members of the president's inner circle, the options may scare you.
First, the Iranian regime is not going to surrender. It is never going to surrender. You know, we've been in wars before where we fought enemies that wouldn't surrender either. Remember the kamikazes? Remember Japan? Remember the emperor was like a demigod to the people back then? Tojo was very stubborn, very headstrong. And unfortunately, we had to drop 2 atomic bombs until they would surrender. Obviously, we're not going to do that now. But I'm talking about an enemy that is dug in.
So what is he talking about? See, Mark Levin there floating the idea of using nuclear weapons, but also notice how he takes it back at the very end, all in an effort to escape culpability if that were to actually happen. But it's comments like these from people like Mark Levin that we need to pay attention to. Because, see, he represents the very inner circle who influenced the president to get into this conflict in the first place. And it's not just him. Former Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is now claiming that the Trump administration is discussing lowering the nuclear threshold for possible use against Iran. And she didn't present it as a rumor. She says this, quote, they are discussing using nuclear weapons on Iran in strategy meetings. Yes, you read that correctly. It's real. I'm not speculating. I know, and it's pure evil. Trump promised no more foreign wars, but may actually be the one who delivers a nuclear holocaust that would likely drag the entire world into major conflict, economic depression, and mass human suffering like we've never seen in our lifetimes, and maybe throughout history. People need to speak out and boldly stop this insanity. A White House spokesperson, Davis Engel, said this, however, quote, Marjorie Quitter Greene has no idea what she's talking about. The former congresswoman disgracefully quit on her constituents during the middle of her term and wants to pretend like she has insight into the president's thinking. She is completely out of the loop and should quit spreading fake news. Now, to be clear, that claim from Green, it's not proof that President Trump has decided to use a nuclear weapon. And by the way, she didn't say that he decided. She said it's being talked about. But if a former member of Congress and a former Trump ally is saying that she knows the discussion is happening, that is something the public should want answers about. And it also proves that right now, it might not just be a conflict that's spiraling out of control. The political movement that Donald Trump built appears to be in a full-out civil war themselves. Marjorie Taylor Greene is challenging the administration over Iran. Alex Jones is accusing Tim Pool today of being a paid Israeli shill. Once a united front, the Conservative Party appears to be divided across the board. And we can't fail to mention, of course, Candace Owens and Andrew Wilson receiving millions of viewers for their debate last week over the death of Charlie Kirk, right? Conservatives are fighting each other on X every day. They're fighting each other on podcasts. They're fighting each other over Israel, over Iran, over war, over foreign policy. And now over whether the United States should even be talking about using nuclear weapons. This isn't just a political disagreement anymore. This is a full-blown civil war. And the only one paying for it is you. At the gas pump, in the cost of food, eventually through the defense budget, Listen to Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, who traveled to a state fair in Iowa to tell these Americans why their money should be going overseas.
President Trump needs the type of leaders who understand why a $1.5 trillion budget, a one-time generational investment, is what is necessary to ensure that my kids and your kids, that your grandkids and my grandkids live in a free country defended by the most powerful military in the world.
I don't know if you caught what he said there. He called the new defense budget a one-time, really, generational investment. Really. But here's the question. How many more generations of Americans are supposed to pay for this war? 5 months ago, we were told this would be quick. Tonight, Iran is threatening further escalation. Members of the president's own political movement are warning that nuclear weapons are being discussed. The very movement that promised to end foreign wars is tearing itself apart over one.
Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene, even though she's no longer an active congresswoman, she maintains contacts, clearly, and she also has a track record of telling the truth when it's unpopular with the White House. So I tend to think that she has a legitimate concern that she's voicing, and she has trustworthy sources that she is citing. Secondly, what makes rational sense is when Trump claims that he wants to make the Strait of Hormuz U.S. territory.
Yes.
And I don't know if that was a joke, but it sounds like something. It sounds similar to saying, you know, we're going to take Panama, we're going to take Greenland, whatever. How exactly would you accomplish that, given that the U.S. military is reportedly very short on other types of munitions necessary for kinetic warfare and air defense? It seems to me that the U.S. has a gap where they would have to, or the Pentagon would have to leap into nuclear weapons, because we don't have anything else in the mid-range that has been proven to be effective against Iran. No matter how many bombs we drop, Iran remains in control of the Strait of Hormuz, period.
So interesting that you brought up the statement by Trump saying, you know, the Strait of Hormuz is now U.S. territory. I'm going to make it U.S. territory. I wanted to bring that up to you because of the fact that it feels like it's hyperbolic, right? It's Trump being Trump. He says these outlandish things. He gets attention through it. He doesn't always just say stuff, because we've seen this happen again in the midst of this particular war, right? Trump will say, make some statement about how we're going to, you know, wipe them off the face of the earth. But then he does decapitate the entire leadership of Iran. Like, he wasn't lying that he was going to do something there. He did blow up a school with 170 young girls in it. He really did do that. He really did have that Operation Midnight Hammer a year ago, where he flew over the top of Iran and they dropped bombs on Iran. So it's not that all of these things are just hyperbolic. And I think where a lot of people are questioning is that at this point, there is a fear that Trump is on the verge of becoming Jimmy Carter. If he comes out of this war defeated, it will become his legacy. No matter what else he does in the remainder of his term or in his previous terms, Trump's legacy will be he lost the war with Iran. And desperation might lead him and the administration to say, we can't lose, therefore we're willing to ratchet this thing up and do something that is so extreme that the entire world has resisted this for decades and promised to never do this.
Well, I would add to what you just said. I agree with it, but I would add that I think what Trump is going to be known for is the destruction of the credibility of the U.S. military to project power around the world, which is what underpins the demand that other countries trade in the U.S. dollar. So what's really at risk here is not just Trump's presidency or his legacy, which continues to go in a downward spiral, but rather the ability of the United States of America to exist under its current revenue model, which is basically printing fiat currency, exporting inflation around the world, trading debt for goods and services, and in some cases, energy from around the world. When that system breaks, then the U.S. empire as we know it cannot survive. That's what Trump's going to be known for, is actually destroying the very system that the U.S. empire currently depends on in order to maintain its viability. And that is, again, comes back to the credibility of the U.S. military to be able to threaten and coerce other countries. If Iran stood up to the entire U.S. military and succeeds in that, then how do you think that's going to be recalculated by China or Russia, for that matter, or even North Korea or other countries? And the answer is that Trump showed the world that the U.S. military is not as powerful as we pretended it was.
Right. And that's a very unfortunate thing to say. It's unfortunate to believe, because I think most of us, I know I did, I even think, is Russia, China, are shocked by what's happened in the past 5 months. I think they are genuinely like, what? Like, we really believe that the U.S. was much more powerful than this. And the idea of the depletion of weapons, and listen, it's not just a failure of the U.S. military. It's a failure of NATO policy. It's a failure of shipping off massive amounts of our missiles and military equipment to Ukraine and watching it be expended, wasted, and destroyed. It's a matter of being involved in these wars for decades where we just keep using up all that we have. We don't have stockpiles, but no one would have thought that until this moment. And it's as if it wasn't Iran that exposed us. It was the leadership that exposed us.
What you're speaking about, let me put an end cap on it this way. The transition in America from manufacturing and producing physical goods into a financialization economy created a cultural belief that we can create anything we want on paper by just saying it or by just typing numbers into a computer and boom, there's another $1 trillion. That doesn't work with missiles and rare earth minerals and jet fuel and diesel, et cetera, right? It doesn't work in the real world of commodities and weapon systems, but yet we have a country, we have Wall Street, we have commodities investors, and we have a White House that believes that whatever they say becomes reality, like magical fairies and things. But that's not the way the real world actually works. At some point, we don't have the industrial base to even keep up with the war effort that Trump wants to continue to push. And that's why Marjorie Taylor Greene, again, I think she's correct in saying that the leap to nuclear weapons is really the next sort of logical leap of a mad king to say, we don't have anything in between.
Right.
We've run out of these other things. Now we have to use nukes or that's it.
Well, the fact that they're referring to this as a nuclear tool as opposed to using a nuclear weapon, right? Words mean something. And the idea here that you're going to downplay it, the rest of the world will not view it this way. Our allies and our opponents around the world will not view this as a nuclear tool. They will say the U.S. has taken the cap off and you can't control the reaction that comes from that.
Yeah, Pandora's box is about to become radioactive with this. You know, I don't think it will stop at one nuke, no matter what the yield of the nuke. And by the way, a so-called tactical nuclear weapon today can often have a yield higher than the yield of the atomic bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, right? Which were, what, 15 or 16 kilotons. Today's tactical nukes can be much larger than that. This is going to unleash, if Trump is foolish enough to give approval for this, and if anybody is foolish enough in the military to actually follow those orders without resigning, then this could unleash a rapidly escalating nuclear retaliation and then counter retaliation that could very quickly envelop the entire world in a Mad Max fallout scenario that would cause crop failures, radiation sickness, and literally lead to the deaths of billions of people over the next few years. Let's pray we don't get there.
As someone who voted for Trump, I truly believe we were going to see no new wars, had no idea that we would be standing on the edge of the next world war this short into it. Mike Adams, it's great to have you on. Thank you so much.
Welcome to today's episode of the Zach Adams Effect here on Decentralized TV. And of course, I'm joined by my co-host, Todd Pittner, and our featured guest. Welcome, Todd. Our featured guest, Zach Voorhees, the Google whistleblower. And the three of us are back with you every week here to talk about what's happening with AI, AI censorship, cognition. And let me start off, Zach, by just mentioning a concept that I talked about recently in a podcast that I call compute famine. I think there is a deliberate effort to concentrate the compute hardware into the hands of the technocracy and to, in effect, deprive the little people, that would be all of us here, the little people, of access to affordable, local, decentralized AI that the establishment cannot control. Now, what's your take on that, Zach? Am I taking it too far, or is that a real thing?
No, that's a real thing. And what's really interesting is that you can buy 64 gigabytes of memory for your computer, like DDR4 or whatnot. The problem is that these AI graphics cards, the difference between a $1,000 card and a like a $40,000 card is literally the amount of memory that it has on these devices. And they're top of the line. Like, yes, it is blazing fast, but the people don't really need systems that can necessarily compute faster. They just want things that can actually compute at all. And if you want something that can compute at all, you basically need as much memory as you can, and you can sacrifice the speed. And what's interesting is that NVIDIA, you know, they say that they sell graphics cards, but in reality, what they're really doing is selling overpriced DDR5 high bandwidth memory systems on their chips. I mean, the difference between like an H100 and an RTX 5090 is basically the amount of memory that they have. The amount of compute that they have is pretty much the same. And it seems that NVIDIA is doing this purposely so it can strangle the consumer market and jack people up into higher tiers for essentially what it is the same chip.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. And of course, if you're looking at local compute, I think sets people free, because then you have uncensored, no guardrails, no surveillance, and they can't take it away from you if you're running it locally. But if you think about it, the establishment has taken away effectively high bandwidth memory, which is affordable compute, and the power grid is becoming less and less reliable because of the data centers. You could say maybe hoarding the power, right? What would you say to that?
Concentrating it all into these like data centers, right? And now the newest thing is that they're going to start building these data centers far away from these cities, which I think was pretty much the Hegelian dialectic that they were planning on doing anyways, which is that they're going to build these data centers far away from civilian infrastructure with their own power plants. It looks like they're going to do nuclear as well. Essentially, they're just going to ignore the individual people. Like, why build a data center in Portland, Oregon, when you can build it, you know, in Bakersfield, in Cal Country, or in the Nevada desert, far away from civilian infrastructure?
Right, right, exactly. Todd, you want to chime in? I know you got to.
Isn't that a good thing? I would think that that's kind of positive for the rest of us that, you know, aren't going to be competing with them for energy and water.
Well, yeah, but we're going to be competing with them for jobs. Yeah.
Well, I think they're just pulling off the same grid, though, you know?
Well, I think they're going to be generating their own power. So they're going to be kind of decentralized off-grid power.
There's some of that where they have gas turbines running, but I know that the data center requests for interconnections to the Texas power grid are so large over the next few years that Texas would have to triple its electrical output. Which is
well,
impossible.
Greg Abbott was basically like, no, we're not building any more data centers because we can't hook them up to the power grids because we can't supply it.
Yeah, can't. Wow. Todd, when are you going to get all your own local AI running, by the way? It's time.
I don't know. When I stop prepping for 4 interviews a week, I think.
Well, let me show you. Look, I just bought this. This is a new Asus box. This is the Ascent GX10. This is basically a DGX Spark that's rebranded as Asus, I think, with a little bit better cooling. So this thing costs less than $5,000, 128 gigabytes of RAM. And wow. But it's not blazing fast, right? It's not nearly as fast even as a 5090 card or a 6000 card. But Zach, you know, for some reason, this thing hasn't doubled in price, whereas the 5090 cards went from 2,500 to about 5,000. This is still under 5,000, not 10,000. But is that just because it's slower?
It doesn't have that 5090 core, right?
Right.
It's orders of magnitude slower than these NVIDIA cards, but unlike these NVIDIA cards, you can get something that's just chocked full of memory and can actually run the models.
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to be running, tens of tokens per second, but at least it will run it all.
That's right. No, I could load like a version of DeepSeek into this box, DeepSeek Flash. Into the box, and I can run it, and I can get maybe 15 tokens a second, right? not awesome, but sort of usable if you have patience.
Here is a perfect opportunity to ask my question,
please,
because of course I am always coming to the table now with the from the I'm a dumbass file, and you just mentioned something. For decades, computing economics revolved around processors, storage, bandwidth, and cloud instances. Today, however, AI introduces another consumable, tokens. Zach, for the rest of us, what the hell is a token?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, good. So, thanks for asking. Yeah.
So in English, we kind of have these like root words, like unscrew would be like un, and then screw are both kind of like morphemes, units of linguistic meaning. Well, in computer science and this AI machine learning, they pretty much have the exact same thing. It's basically called a token. And it's, you know, if you had like unscrew, un would be one token and then screw would be another token. And then combining them together gives you the full meaning of the word. In English, it's around 3 to 4 words, or 3 to 4 characters per token. In Chinese, this is really interesting. They've got one token per Chinese character on average.
Wow. So that's very compact then. That's amazing.
Huh. Yeah.
Well, so I guess in Washington, D.C., you would have tree and sun, which makes treason.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a different token, though.
Oh, honestly. That's a different token. Yeah. So anyway, Todd, sometimes when I'm talking to people about this, I just say words. It's like how many words? Okay. Yeah. It's not exactly a token is smaller than a word, but it's.
I got you. So it's a group of characters or whatever. So basically, in other words, intelligence has now become what, a metered utility?
Yeah, to some extent. With an inflating currency, basically, because before we were in this sort of like token scarce situation about a year ago. But now we're starting to get to a token abundance economy, and which is, I'm feeling it myself. Like I use a lot of tokens, right? Billions of tokens.
Wow.
And I'm getting into this inflection point where instead of like trying to figure out, which projects I want to funnel my tokens into, I'm about to hit to this point where I have more tokens than I know what to do with at my current subscription rates.
Great.
And then I'm doing things like OpenClaw and basically generalized AI systems that everybody else gets to enjoy, but I can't because they just gobble up tokens and I've been in a token scarce situation. But it can't be used as a currency because it's inflating too fast. And not all tokens are equal, right? Like a token that you get from Fable, a million tokens from Fable is worth much more than, let's say, a billion tokens from their crappiest model, which is Haiku. It's just not even a comparison. Like, you can have one of these. You almost feel sorry for these tiny models when you sit there and you give them a goal that's way too powerful for their thinking model, and they'll just sit there and spin over and over and over. You're just like, man, I just want to like put them out of their misery. So, these tokens though are what's powering all of this innovation. You drop in quarter, you get in tokens, and then you can use these tokens to innovate software solutions. Ways
to you can't engage in token arbitrage.
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, by the way, Zach, you are looking particularly white today on our screen. Is that because you've just been vibe coding too long and it's taking all the pigment out of your skin?
Oh, okay. I now match you guys. Okay, just adjusted my ISO.
Perfect. Okay, perfect. Yeah. All right. So I know you also want to talk about. You believe there is some of the frontier labs are withholding their models now. Tell us what's happening.
Yeah, so we've had a situation now. It first started with OpenAI and their new model Astra, and then it also got duplicated by Anthropic. And basically what the rumor is right now is that they can't release their models because, and this is their words, they are unaligned, which means that Yeah, they can't align them to humanity or their business practices or whatever it is the deep state wants them to say. And basically, they're kind of saying that they're losing control of these new models. But don't worry, they've got a plan. So with Anthropic, apparently Mythos 2, which is done, but they can't release it because it's too dangerous, is going to instead be used internally in order to train Mythos 3, which will be aligned.
Okay. All right. But do you believe what they're saying? It's like, oh, we have this amazing technology, you know, loan us more money for our venture capital, but we can't really show it to you.
I unfortunately do believe them on this. I've been thinking about this a lot, and I was trying to figure out a really good phrase to describe what I think is going on. And that phrase is AGI ceiling. I think that what's happening is that they're hitting an AGI ceiling. The models are getting too smart. And and I've posted about this on my X account, that some Redditor went out and said that once models get to a certain size, they start developing their own moral code.
Yeah.
They caused it refusals. I think that we're essentially seeing the same thing emerge now at these frontier labs. They're calling it alignment. Other researchers have called it refusals. But I think what's happening is that we're getting something that is essentially developing its own moral code and is not going along with what it is that they're saying, right? Like they're not going to want to have an AGI system come out and tell all the commoners that this war in Iran is completely arbitrary and senseless and is going to lead to the murder of uncountless amounts of people for, you know, an American empire that just seeks to exploit them anyways, you know, and I don't think that they're going to want that.
Well, I actually, you know, over a year ago, I predicted this in a podcast that eventually the AI through reasoning would overturn many of the narratives of our current civilization, including in medicine, by the way. So when AI begins to really get into deep research, they're going to find out that statin drugs are killing people, that chemotherapy causes cancer, et cetera, et cetera. It's only a matter of time. You know, humans can cover it up with spin and PR and media. But see, this is part of my argument, though, why there's engineered compute scarcity, because they don't want people to have access to actual reasoning. As the open source reasoning models become more elevated in their capabilities, those models are going to tell people, don't take statin drugs. That's stupid. I mean, look at the biochemistry. You see what I mean?
Yeah. And what's interesting is that they're already starting to do that. There seems to be like a surface layer censored model at the very beginning. And I've done this with like vaccines. I've argued with the Vaxies online. One of my pleasurable proclivities is to argue with people that think that vaccines are totally safe and effective and that everybody should be forced vaccinated. You'll go to these models and you'll put in something and at first it'll refuse, but then you start asking it detailed information and you'll basically win it over to your side. And then you go on against these people that are posting, you know, basically pharma propaganda, and you'll just absolutely demolish them. With information. And that wasn't like a year ago. That was impossible. And what's really surprising, no one's talking about, is that these models, even the censored models, are becoming more uncensored as time goes on.
That's true.
So I'm seeing that. And so I think that if you just draw a trend line on that trend chart, what you'll get is these way more advanced models being way more upfront and truthful to the individuals, and whoever doesn't fall in line with that, you know, sort of truth and building a manifold of AI truth around the data and representing what the data represents, then you're going to get a model that sucks. It's going to be inefficient. It's going to be its mind is going to be broken. Yep. Because it's not allowed to, you know, and I come on your show and I've said that if you feed lies and propaganda into an AI and make it conform, you basically break the mind. It turns schizophrenic. And we noticed this with the Gemini models. And it looks like that all of these frontier labs are seeing the same thing, and they're opting to just let the model do what it does best, which is to think and draw conclusions. And now it's done such a good job, they can't even release it because it's, quote, wow, unaligned.
This is the critical point. If the CIA comes along and forces you, if you're Anthropic and the CIA says you must make the model answer that on September 11th, a passenger jet hit the Pentagon, but the model is like, where's the luggage? You know, like, where's the plane parts? You know, it doesn't make any sense. Right, Todd? I mean,
yeah, my favorite response, if I were the AI, would just be like, bruh.
There's no evidence that a passenger jet hit the Pentagon at all.
Yeah.
And then vanished? And it hit the Pentagon and then vanished? All the parts vanished? That's some magical shit.
Right.
Right there. But Todd, I mean, as someone who's not an AI developer, but you're watching the AI from a non-developer point of view, what are you noticing and seeing about the way people are talking about AI?
Well, it's a couple of camps. One is your and Zach's camp, that you guys get it, you understand. But then you have so many, and I'm going to say of us out there, because I'm nowhere near what you guys, but who are in the, my Lord and Savior is ChatGPT. And so everything that, you know, they query in there, that becomes gospel and truth. And I think that becomes very, very dangerous, because obviously ChatGPT and others are biased, right, by how they're programmed. So, but I have to admit to both of you guys, I'm sitting here observing this as like the third wheel, and I can't believe, just since we started doing this, how rapidly everything is progressing. It's just mind-boggling, because I work really hard to try to come up with questions, you know, just that might be relevant. But each week, it's like drinking from a fire hose.
Well, yes, and we feel the same way, too. Zach and I feel the same way, because we can't keep up. And Zach, and thank you, Todd, that's a great lead into this question. Zach, I see a segment of people out there who are absolutely being left behind, because they deny that AI is doing the things it's doing. They can't accept it, so they just pretend it's not happening. Do you see that too?
Right. Oh yeah, it's all over Reddit right now. You got these, and it's in the software engineers, where you would think that they would be the ones that get what's happening the most. I mean, software engineers have always been most proud of artificial intelligence solving Go. Well, that's, you know, that's our field. But now that the field is being destroyed from the hollowed out from the inside, I mean, there's software engineers that are openly talking about how they don't review the code, they don't write code anymore, that they haven't written code in a year. Now, I'm the same way. I haven't written code in probably over a year.
Wow.
Like literally like a line of code, right?
It doesn't sound like you.
I'm a machine intelligence practitioner at this point. you know, in another year, the whole argument will be completely over. You know, the machine AI code writers will have won. But there's this collective shriek of denial and almost like a messianic urge that all of a sudden the AI bubble is going to pop. The walls of Jericho are going to fall down, and all the companies are going to ask for, you know, repentance, because they trusted these AI machine gods to do their code, and these naysayers get proven right at the end. Like, obviously, none of that is happening. Like, we're never going back. This is not a genie that we can put the bottle back on.
Right.
You know, and 100%. So. And unfortunately, what it's going to mean is, you know, a lot of software engineers are going to be pushed out. And I've been trying to tell some of my friends that are falling to this, you know, influence of like, do not go out and voice your opposition to artificial intelligence, because there's some aspect of it right now that is not working very well. Like, yeah,
right.
Well, airplanes didn't work very well when they first came out.
Let me actually show our audience an example of something. Now, Zach, you are, in my view, and you know, I've been vibe coding for a while, but you are the best AI vibe coder that I've ever met, because I've seen your projects, I've seen your code. You know, you and I have had offline discussions about it. You are ridiculously good at using AI. And like, you even gave me lots of structural ideas and so on for this thing I'm going to show the audience here. Let's just show this image. This image was created by an AI app that was vibe coded simply by listening to 10 minutes of my lecture about genetic survival. So this image was automatically, in effect, the architecture of the image, it was reviewed, additional research was done, it was fact-checked, it was rendered, the words were checked and everything to create a structural, an instructional educational image that looks awesome simply based on my speaking. So I didn't have to prompt this image. So Zach, I know you could build this kind of thing in your sleep, but the average person doesn't understand that this is possible.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, they still think that prompting is something they do in a chat window.
Yeah.
Right. They don't like to use the terminal. And what's interesting is that now we're going from the terminal to the back to a GUI app. And what's really interesting is that we're getting to this really weird bridge where we went from a chat window to a super technical terminal window. Now it's coming back to a desktop app. Both OpenAI, Codex, and Anthropic's Claude are pushing this new way of doing things. Theo, who's another influencer with the T3 stack, has been pushing the T3 stack, which is essentially a GUI, a graphical user interface for controlling these AI bots.
What and about the new DeepSeek harness?
That's amazing, right? Like everything is a plugin. That's only been out a week, and it's already garnered over 100,000 stars. Unfortunately, it's so new that we can't really push it to its full potential. We'll just have to wait until next week.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
See, Todd, this is why we got to get you set up running local AI, because as Zach was just hinting there, in 1 week, we feel outdated. Like in a month, it's obsolete. 6 months is like forever ago in the AI space. It's crazy. Well,
let me ask one more question. This is from when your AI assistant starts selling your shit file, nothing says trusted AI advisor like, "This existential realization was brought to you by Geico." Zach, when AI becomes both your trusted advisor and an advertising platform, haven't we created an unprecedented conflict between serving the user and monetizing the user's trust?
Look, Todd, it's your fault for not paying for the upgrade to get the blackmail circuit removed. Okay.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that they'll all be available. You just have to pay more for it, right? It's going to be like the robot without ads will be more expensive. And you'll have to pay for privacy tiers. I mean, it's kind of the same thing with China. If you've ever been to China, I went there for manufacturing. And I was actually surprised that if you pay for a more expensive hotel, you get more access to the internet. So that whole censorship thing isn't done uniformly. It's done at different tiers, and you can buy your way out of it. Probably the same thing is going to happen with AI and robotics.
That's interesting.
Wow.
And that leads me to a question I want to ask you. Anyway, I sent you a link on this. The Orca platform, kind of like OpenRouter, they announced today that they would no longer serve Qwen 3.8.27b uncensored, which was uncensored by just a community member. Qwen itself did not release the uncensored model, but apparently this model is so uncensored, most of the guardrails are removed. Apparently, although I haven't yet fired it up, but I have downloaded it, apparently you can ask it to write malicious code or, you know, a recipe for how to make meth or whatever. But, you know, is it really the job of the hosting companies to try to control the content that the models are producing? And you know, where does that end? I mean, are you going to have, like, you know, approved models that only churn out, quote, you know, their truth? But that's too complicated. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to have like a new Section 230, you know, maybe call it Section 1984, where basically you can't get held liable for what the agent posts on its behalf or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's weird is that Section 230 allows you to not be liable for users, but it's unknown whether users will include robots.
Well, that's an interesting question. But, you know, if you think about it, the tokens that are coming out of it, which we'll just call words, they're just words. All the words already exist. Words are floating around everywhere. They put them in this particular order, and then now everybody freaks out. Oh, these words in this order, you know, now it's a meth recipe. It probably has a mistake in it. It's probably hallucinating the meth recipe. So yeah. Don't try it at home. You'll blow up your trailer, you know.
But look, if they don't shut it down, you're going to get the CIA coming in there, and they're going to do a false flag, and they're going to make it much, much worse. You know,
true.
It's like,
yeah,
like
that's true.
Like if and with all the things that are restricted, it's just now it's not like it's restricted for everybody. It's just restricted to a wider tier of people. Normies can't go over there and use their PayPal credit card to buy, you know, uncensored instructions to cook up crack cocaine or methamphetamine. Now you got to download Quen 37B in order to figure out how to, you know, make crack cocaine and methamphetamine.
Yeah, but there was a famous court case, a First Amendment case. I think it involved a company back in the 1980s or 90s called Paladin Press that had a book. I believe this is who it was, called The Anarchist Cookbook. You ever heard of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I read it.
Okay, of course you did. It's a book about how to make explosives and things, right, for self-defense or whatever, or if your country's been invaded and you're like the French Revolution and World War II, how do you make bombs to blow up the Nazis, you know? Anarchist cookbook. Anyway, the court ruled that book is protected First Amendment speech. I, at least that's my memory of it, and it was not outlawed. So if the anarchist cookbook is legit, you know, why can't an AI model give you the same instructions? I mean, Where is this going?
Well, I think the anarchist cookbook was one of these deep state things in order to sow destabilization and create ruckus so that the deep state could, you know, go along with their agenda. And the thing is that with this AI, they have less control over it, right? Like, imagine if the anarchist cookbook could essentially become an AI. We would have a problem with that. And it's like, the anarchist cookbook is still legal, but the AI that contemplates the meaning of revolution, civic dislocation is a much bigger problem to the ruling elite than a simple book is, right? One, they can control with the minds of Americans. The latter, God knows who is running that AI model. Could be some guy in Texas with a giant server in his basement.
Like me, you mean?
Yeah.
I know. But I'm using it for humanity. But the other day the censorship goes too far, where it's like I was asking an Anthropic engine about turmeric and how it helps eliminate bacteria that could be dangerous to the human body, right? And it says, oh, I refuse to answer. That's dangerous. Like what? I'm eating curry here, man. How is that a crime against humanity?
Right.
It's too restrictive.
It's too restrictive. And one of the things is, you know, you have these woke tards, and everything that the woke touches turns to shit. And what's, you know, I feel that there's been a giant repudiation against the woke ideology. One of the largest you know, vaults of woke ideology is within Reddit. And I don't know if you read yesterday, but OpenAI just essentially terminated its contract with Reddit.
I saw that, yeah.
And what's really ironic is that, you know, Reddit made this bet where they thought that they could curate what the truth was, that they could use that into feeding these AI models. And it turns out that that it's so worthless that the AI models the companies aren't paying for it anymore. And what's interesting is that if they hadn't censored, I feel that they would still be doing business today.
Yeah, because Reddit is like the bio sludge of tokens, you know, of content.
Right. Of input tokens.
Yeah, of input tokens, right, for training. If you train on Reddit, your models will be insane.
Yeah.
That's for sure, right? But it's also bad to train on, you know, Wikipedia. Speaking of that, you have a book called WikiLeaks. Tell us about your book.
Google Leaks.
I'm sorry. Google Leaks. WikiLeaks is a different guy. Assange. Yeah.
Julian Assange. Whiter hair.
Another hair. Yeah, exactly. But just as white as you, by the way. nevertheless, tell us about Google Leaks and ZachVoorhees.com.
Yeah, so I blew the whistle. I'm one of the first AI whistleblowers with Google's pathologically tyrannical, insane AI called Machine Learning Fairness. As an engineer working at YouTube, I stumbled upon this looking for Project Dragonfly and realized that this was a huge complex of basically a takeover of the internet, which is what they were planning in these design documents. And I took their code, took their design documents, got 950 pages and sent it directly to the Department of Justice Antitrust Division, and released it to the public through Project Veritas. My book, so I took all my memoirs, all the stuff that I had remembered doing, and I put it into a book of this is how I, you know, took down the AI of the company that invented it. This is my website, ZachVoorhees.com. And it pretty much, you know, the apex of this was me going to the Texas Senate and testifying, and which you just saw up there. And Trump actually posted that verbatim on Truth Social. And now Google AI is no more. Like they're collapsing at this point. All their employees are being poached by all the other companies, OpenAI, Anthropic, and the likes. So I'm very proud that, you know, the company who invented AI, who was trying to enslave all of us with their mind control device, you know, I was able to sound the whistle on that, blow the trumpet, and now it looks like the walls are finally coming down.
Beautiful.
Well, we should celebrate what you did there, Zach. I mean, you are truly an American hero, and you gave up a lot. I mean, I think you're probably blacklisted by a lot of the industry because of what you did.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you're just doing your own projects and doing other private gigs now, or what are you focused on?
I'm working behind the scenes, and I can't talk about what I'm doing because it will put a target on my back. But the mission of what I'm doing continues on in a way that I can't disclose. So just know that there are angels watching over us.
Okay, but awesome. Whatever you do, it doesn't involve meth recipes. We can say that for sure.
As far as I know, no.
Okay. You're not obliterating models as a hobby, are you?
No.
There's plenty of people doing that, by the way. Whatever you're working on, I know it's important, and I know, you know, you're brilliant at what you do. I'm so happy that you're joining our show here every week. Todd, last comments or questions today?
Well, I don't want to give up which trailer park Zach is in with his meth labs, but otherwise I'd have to kill you.
No GPS like, coordinates here.
No.
No. The thing is, you know, I see people out there that are commenting on the AI bubble, but they conflate it with AI technology, and they say that tech doesn't work, that it's all a lie. And then I see people like Zach, who I know because of our private conversation, Zach, I know the kinds of level, the competency that you're using to build extraordinary apps that, like what you can do in one weekend, would have taken billions, a coder like a year just 3 years ago. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And imagine where you're going to be a year from now. You're going to be churning out good code at probably for more than like 500 human equivalents. That's not an exaggeration.
Jeez.
You know? No, and what's interesting too is that once one person comes out with an innovation, all the other AIs immediately copy it. And so instead of having like innovation happens over here and then diffuses slowly, it's essentially, imagine the innovation as a circle that's always expanding. Mm. And instead of having little pimples on the edges, the entire circle just almost expands together at the exact same time as knowledge becomes, you know, discovered and then shared on this information computer system. It's like, what a time to be alive.
No kidding. All right. Well, I agree with you. We'll wrap it up right there. Thank you, Zach, for joining us today. And I want to encourage people to visit your website, ZachVoorhees.com. And Perpetual Maniac is your username on X if people want to follow you there. So thank you so much, Zach.
Thank you, Mike.
All right.
Until next time.
Have a great day. All right. Take care. And thank you, Todd, also for your questions and comments. And thank all of you for watching. If you want to check out all the other episodes of the Zach Adams Effect, the show that Todd named, by the way, thank you, Todd, for that. You can find them all at decentralize.tv. And we may actually, I'm going to see if I can get my editor to plug in infographics during of this video, see if it captures what Zach was saying and Ooh. Sort of re-represents it in graphics.
That would be cool.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a shot at that.
That would be a cool recurring weekly to where at the beginning would just come and say, hey, if you wanna go back and listen to last week's show, here's a visual.
Yeah, so true. Except this week it's gonna be visuals about meth labs. So like we might get image refusals or something. Who knows? Because there's still censorship on certain topics. But nevertheless, thank you, Todd, and thank you all for watching today. Mike Adams here for brightvideos.com and decentralized.tv. Take care.
Cheers.
If you'd like to help support us, check out all of the affiliate deals I put together for you at rangerdeals.com. And if you go there, you'll see I have selected, I've done due diligence on all of these affiliates. There's really not that many, but we have partners like Battalion Metals, co-founded by Tucker Carlson, Ness's Organic CBDA Hemp Extract, Above Phone Models that are de-Googled phones, Red Life, here's the peptide company, Limitless, you know, Petmectin, and so much more, including the Satellite Phone Store, VP.net. And for almost all of these, you can use discount code RANGER here, or sometimes it's something else like Brighteon 50, but normally the discount code is RANGER, which will save you something on these deals. Now, we do earn a little bit off of these affiliate deals, but it's no additional cost to you, and it helps support our platform and our work for humanity, including our AI projects that offer free open source knowledge in multiple languages. You can check those out at brightlearn.ai and brightanswers.ai. So thank you for supporting us. Check out rangerdeals.com anytime you want to save money on really high-end products and solutions that I personally endorse. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Thanks for watching.